Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease. The doctors of the future are here." Welcome to Blue Zone Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Good afternoon and welcome to Blue Zone Wellness. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry, broadcasting from right outside of Orlando, Florida. Wherever you may be listening, again, welcome. Special welcome to my friends over in Costa Rica and also here in the U.S. I'd like to remind you, if you're looking to call into the show, the guest call-in number is 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. You can listen at blogtalkradio.com/uzonewellness. If you go on to our chat room. We're open there. And we're gonna have a very, very interesting show for you today. Again, you can go on at Uzone Wellness. Just do a Google search. If you can't find it, just go to Blog Talk Radio. You can also find us on the Next Level Wellness. And you can also listen at Phase 3 Ministries. That's PHASE, the number 3 Ministries.com/WordPress. So just go to Phase3Ministries.com, and on the homepage, you can just click on right just beneath microphone and you can listen in. Now, you'd like to keep up with me there, you can go at my blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. I have quite a bit of information there, natural health information. You can also send me a friend request. You can friend request me at facebook.com/nature doc. That's facebook.com/nature doc, NatureDoc. Again, we have a very, very exciting and interesting show, informative show for you today. We're going to be talking about STPs, that's sexually transmitted parasites. It's not something that you may hear talked about quite often. It's something I've been talking about for quite some time to people who I know personally, and I've talked about it also in seminars that I've done. We're going to talk about that a little bit today. We're also going to talk about the thyroid in our Week in Natural News segment. We're going to be talking about the thyroid a little bit. I had a lot of cases with thyroid issues, either hyperthyroidism or hypothyroidism or adrenal gland endocrine system issues. We're going to talk a little bit about some herbs that can work in harmony or work good for that. We're going to talk about a little bit of mind-body medicine. We're going to talk about some studies that came out that linked mood disorders to inflammation in the body. Very interesting. It's something that we've been talking about here quite a bit, too. There's a very close connection between your mind and your body. We call it mind-body medicine. We're going to talk a little bit about beet juice and how it can increase your health overall, especially your stamina in terms of athletic performance or working out. It's very, very beneficial. We've talked about beet juice before, how beneficial it is for your liver. It's very beneficial to help cleanse the liver, but it's in the totality of the way it works, it's also very beneficial for your stamina. We're also going to talk a little bit about elderberry, and then we're going to talk more about milk thistle. We talked about there's no comparative equal to it in pharmaceutical drugs. However, very, very interesting show for you today, and I want you to stay tuned. Again, if you'd like to call in with a question or comment, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. I'm going to be right back after this brief message, and we're going to get right into the show.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work? Or if it's just all quackery, then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
You are listening to Blue Zone Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry on BlueZoneWellness.org. Be sure to join us here every week at the same time. You can also listen at blogtalkradio.com/BlueZoneWellness. There you can also download the app and listen to the archived versions on your smartphone. So from Blue Zone Wellness, here's to your health.
Welcome back to You Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for listening. And we're going to go ahead and get started for our show, wherever you may be. Again, you can, if you'd like to do so, you can call in with a question at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. Now, we're going to start off, and this is our first segment, the Weekend Afternoon Review. And if you haven't listened to us before, this is where I take a few articles that have come around, that have come out during the past week. And we kind of just discuss and analyze them, and I just put my two cents in with respect to these particular articles, and based upon some of my own practical experience and practice, et cetera. And one of the articles that we're going to deal with is going to be the sexual parasites article. But before we get to that, I want to start off by dealing with an article that came out on yesterday, and it was from naturalnews.com, and it's entitled Understanding Thyroid Disorders and How to Treat Them Naturally. And because I do get quite a few instances of thyroid issues and endocrine system issues, I thought this was an interesting article to discuss and analyze a little bit on here. Again, this article was published on the 15th, which was yesterday, and it is entitled Understanding Thyroid Disorders and How to Treat Them Naturally. And it also starts off by pointing out how the thyroid controls a wide range or supports or controls a wide range of functions. And in fact, consequently, he says thyroid disorders can be extremely debilitating, which is true. He quotes Tess Thompson from NativeRemedies.com saying, quote, thyroid hormones are used by every cell in the body, and how by disrupting production of the thyroid hormones, this can have a far-reaching effect upon protein synthesis, calcium levels, and the manner in which the body burns energy. So this is true. This is just a few things. The other things that can occur, but here she points out, the writer of this article is quoting, Tess Thompson points out how by disrupting the production of thyroid hormones, you can cause things within the body, such as problems with protein synthesis, calcium levels, and the manner in which the body burns energy. And one of the things that most people are not aware of that just beneath the thyroid glands, we have the parathyroid glands, which are responsible for the production of calcium and assimilation of calcium into the body. And so it's very, very important when we look at the entire endocrine system, when you look at the thyroid gland, you're not just looking at the thyroid gland, you're also looking at the entire endocrine system. So this is why it's important to understand we have to address the body holistically. And this is why just going to endocrinologists, and although he may or she may be very apt and very good at what they do, unless they look at the body entirely, if you go to them with thyroid issues and they just prescribe you a thyroid drug, that's not necessarily taking into account the entire endocrine system, because whenever you have problems with any of the glands of the endocrine system, it's going to put an additional burden on the other glands. And whenever you have especially a problem that's clinical, you know, it's bad enough if it's subclinical, but once it becomes clinical, once you begin to notice you feel you need to seek some medical attention for it, it could be to the point to where the burden is placed on the other organs of that system, because that one organ is so worn out or fatigued or deficient or whatever the case might be. So it's not enough just to address, typically speaking, it's not enough just to address the thyroid gland, as we will see, but it becomes necessary many times to look upon not only the entire endocrine system, but perhaps the entire body, because the systems work together for the overall health of the entire body. The article goes on to point out further. She goes on to say, and this the author of this article is quoting again Tess Thompson from NativeRemedies.com, and he says, she goes on to say that symptoms related to thyroid problems can thus surface in any part of the body. And two of the most common problems she points out is Graves' disease, which can lead to hyperthyroidism, and Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which starts with a hyperthyroid condition but converts to hypothyroidism later. Again, you have the difference between hyperthyroidism and hypothyroidism. Hyper being overactive and hypo being underactive. He goes on to say, with so many functions, of course, it is important to maintain proper thyroid function, and there are a number of ways to do so naturally before you have any problems. And he, quoting her, or actually he quotes Shasta Tierra, a clinical herbalist and nutrition specialist. He says, quote, there are no herbs, or she says, quote, there are no herbs that have thyroid hormone in them. That being said, there are herbal, lifestyle, and dietary choices that can be done to help the whole body, which in turn will help the thyroid. And this is true, so I said earlier, because the thyroid hormones either support or function in such a way that the entire body relies on these hormones as their supporter or they depend on these hormones directly or indirectly. And so it becomes very important to understand that in terms of the entire body. And so, as he quotes her further, many people with thyroid and autoimmune thyroid conditions are interested to know which herbs can help restore their health back to normal, especially when used in combination with other factors such as eating well. As always, as you heard me say on here before, if you've listened, eating in harmony with the rainbow and in harmony with the garden. The closer to the garden you eat, and the closer to the color of the rainbow you eat, in association with eating, the closer to the garden, the better off your health would be. The colors of the rainbow being red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. If you look at most of your foods that are high in antioxidants, and fresh fruits and vegetables, etc., they will fall typically into that range of colors. And so that's the easiest way to remember. Remember, the Creator has given us these colors, probably to even help us remember to see and to associate healthy foods with these particular colors. Now, they go on to point out in this particular article, and they point out erythritol root, and they point out how this herb can be effective for people with either hypo or hyperthyroidism. And it does not directly affect the gland itself, but instead it helps the body to adapt to stressful situations, and it also helps with the health of the immune system. This is true. I've used erythritol root in my practice. I've recommended its use, and I've seen the benefits of erythritol root. And you can actually go to my blog, faith3ministries.com/WordPress, and type in erythritol root. That's E-L-E-U-T-H-E-R-O. That's E-L-E-U-T-H-E-R-O. And erythritol root is an herb, and you basically feed your adrenal glands, which are a significant part of your endocrine system. And by feeding your adrenal glands, they're what we call in natural medicine the shock absorbers of your body. They help you deal with stress. And what happens when you stress, and I've mentioned this on here before, when you stress out, you deplete your B-complex vitamins. And your B-complex vitamins are very, very, very important. Some months ago, we went through the B-complex vitamins, B1, B2, we went through the different B-complex vitamins, and I explained the importance of these B-complex vitamins, and I explained how they function in the body, and I explain how to determine when you have a deficiency of one or of many. And you can go back and scroll through the archives and find those if you would like of this show. But it's very, very, very important to understand this. And so erythritol root, in my practice, I've seen it give energy because it helps, it recharges the adrenals. It helps, and it also helps balance the hormones in such a way that it helps the thyroid gland with both hypo or hyperthyroidism. And as this article points out further, for folks with adrenal problems common in people with thyroid and autoimmune conditions, this herb is thought to be extremely beneficial, says Dr. Eric Onaisky, author of the book Natural Treatment Solutions for Hypothyroidism and Graves' Disease. They also point out echinacea. Some people recommend, some doctors, he says, recommend, or herbalists recommend echinacea, but there's some controversy with respect to how some think it's better, how some think it's not. I've never specifically recommended or used echinacea for this particular or for this specific issue here, so I'm not going to speak to it for yay or nay, but I just addressed the article. It says natural health practitioners differ on this herb in terms of whether it can be effective for both hypo and hyperthyroidism. And the article goes on to say, further, health and fitness writer Monica Viriel lists echinacea as a herb to avoid for hypothyroidism, that's low thyroid function, along with others, ginseng, astragalus, bamboo, burdock, in the earlier stages of the condition, she says, at least. But Dr. Onaisky writes, people with Graves' disease or Hashimoto's thyroiditis can, of course, benefit from this herb since it will help with their immune system health. And he goes on to caution, though, that the key is determining the quality of the herb. And finally, this particular article points out bugleweed. I'm familiar with that as well. Most herbalists or naturopathic doctors will be familiar, or any even allopathic doctors who may practice natural medicine. Now, many allopathic doctors who practice natural medicine will sometimes not be as familiar with some of the more herbs that are not so popular. Some of them will be, some of them won't be, but most herbalists and most naturopathic doctors will typically be familiar with some of these more obscure sounding herbs. As this particular article points out, he says, an odd-sounding herb indeed, bugleweed nonetheless has been associated with positive results when it comes to treating thyroid problems. Bugleweed in its pure herb form has been given to those with thyroid problems for years with great success, says Annette Phillips, a natural medicine writer. Natural doctors also give bugleweed to their clients who are suffering from an enlarged thyroid gland or who are known to have a goiter. Onaisky says bugleweed is his favorite herb for hyperthyroidism, adding that when I was diagnosed with Graves' disease, this herb did a great job to help manage the hyperthyroid symptoms I was experiencing. He says the herb is not for those suffering from hypothyroidism, which is low thyroid function, and also shouldn't be taken by those women with hyperthyroidism who are pregnant or lactating. Other herbs that can help treat nasty thyroid conditions include bladderwrack and ashwagandha, says Dr. Oskanai. And he said, finally, the article points out, in the unfortunate event of occurrence of thyroid disease, the emphasis on herbs for thyroid that contain iodine and those that promote thyroid function and boost immunity should be added. And so, again, let me add to that if you thyroid disease is a serious disease, and so if you're having thyroid issues, you need to get a diagnosis to understand exactly if you have hyperthyroidism, hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's, Graves, whatever, so you can have an understanding of what it is that you're dealing with. And then you need to, of course, alter your diet, eat in harmony with those laws of health that you heard me talk about on here if you're not a new listener. Those laws of health being trust in the Creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, diet, rest, and self-control. And it's very, very important. And then as the herbs that I've mentioned here, bugleweed for hyperthyroidism, eleuthero root for both. And echinacea is a little bit more controversial with respect to using it specifically for thyroid issues. But if you bring in your lifestyle in harmony with those laws of health, you're going to do quite well. And if you stick with it, you have to deal with stress, because even though stress may not seem that it directly affects the thyroid gland, because it does affect your adrenal glands. Your adrenal glands are going to affect your thyroid gland, your entire endocrine system. And stress, not only that, affects the entire system anyway, or probably more accurately discern distress, because all of us have stress, but it's those when we don't manage our stress properly, it turns into distress, and then it becomes negative, and it begins to destroy the body, and it can have very, 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 very long-term and lasting effects and extensive effects throughout the body. We're going to flip over to our next article now. This is an article that came out on the 12th, and it's entitled Mood Disorders Linked to Inflammation. And this is very important to understand here, because here we're dealing with mind-body, what I call mind-body medicine, and what is known in the natural health field as mind-body medicine, and even in some allopathic circles, mind-body medicine. And basically, this is the connection between your mind, your thoughts, and your body, the physical as well as the emotional. And this article was taken from Yahoo Health. And the article pointed out a study that was done in the JAMA Psychiatry, the Journal of the American Medical Association. And our article starts out by pointing out depression and other mood disorders could be the brain's response to inflammation, according to a new nationwide study from Denmark released Wednesday. Now, you've heard me talk about on here before the connection between the mind and the body, and I stated that 9/10 or 90% of diseases have their origin in the mind. This is connected closely to my statement before a few minutes ago with respect to stress. Negative emotions, stress, anxiety, anger, bitterness, whatever the negative emotion is, your mind relays that to your body. The brain will produce certain biochemical reactions that will be sent throughout the body, and those negative emotions will turn your body toxic and acid, and it will cause your pH level to be acid. And so this will, and when your pH level becomes acid, it will consume your buffering minerals such as calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium. And this is one of the reasons why people who stress so much can end up with heart issues. Not only the fact that it causes your blood vessels to constrict and it causes and it lessens the amount of oxygen that can get to your brain and to your heart, but not only that, it affects your levels of potassium and sodium, which are crucial for heart function. And then you add to that the acid condition that's created in your blood and your other bodily fluids. You're just waiting for your time bomb waiting to happen, to explode. So this is why it's very important to understand the mind-body medicine. And according to this article, this study that came out that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Psychiatry, is the largest of its kind and adds further evidence to the emerging theory that certain mental health conditions could be caused by inflammation. Now, I'm more so of the in this study, it talked about how certain mental health conditions can be caused by inflammation. I believe that to be so, but I also believe that the same with the mind. If you have emotional inflamed emotions, can also cause inflammation in the body, as can inflame parts of the other parts of the body that are inflamed can cause inflammation in the mind or in the brain, or can affect the brain. According to this study, researchers found that patients with an autoimmune disease were 45% more likely to have a mood disorder, while any history of infection increased the risk of mood disorder by 62%. So the article says about one-third of people diagnosed with a mood disorder have been hospitalized in the past for a serious infection. And inflammation is, and let me stop there for a second. The article points out, again, how scientifically now they're beginning to accept, because the science is there, in allopathic medicine, mainstream medicine, not so long ago was calling this quackery. The connection between the mind and the body, that somehow that which is abstract or thoughts had any effect on your organs. But the fact of the matter is it does, and now they're beginning to see that the science is bearing that out. And just as you know, the inflammation is the body's protective response to an infection, while your autoimmune disorders are inflammatory conditions caused by the body's overreactions to naturally occurring substances and tissues. In other words, if you have autoimmune disease like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, basically your immune system is overreacting, and it's killing more than just the invaders. It's killing your cells. It's destroying the cells of your organs, and this is because it's become confused. And anytime you have a confused immune system, it's typically the result of deficiencies, because the cells tend to communicate with one another, and it's almost like a telephone line. If you cut the telephone line, then the cells become confused, and they don't know the messages that they're supposed to be understanding. They don't understand these messages. They become confused, and then the problems result. According to this article, it goes on further to say that the associations found in the study suggest that autoimmune diseases and infections are important factors in the development of mood disorders in subgroups. And they said that the Danish researchers drew on a nationwide database of more than 3.56 million people born between 1945 and 1996. Of those people, about 3%, 91,637 people were admitted to a free state hospital for mood disorder treatment. The article says further, researchers compared the incidence of infections like sepsis, hepatitis, and urinary tract infections, as well as autoimmune disorders like lupus, anemia, celiac disease, and Crohn's disease, with the incidence of bipolar disorder, depression, psychotic depression, and other mood disorders. And they found a strong correlation between infection, autoimmune disorders, and mood disorders, strengthening the hypothesis that depression is directly linked to inflammation. So here, if you have depression, it may very well be linked to some physical ailment that you have. And your people are going to psychiatrists and they're on drugs that are supposed to help them mentally. And many times, the origin of the problem could very well be physical, or it could be mental, and then, too, there's the interaction between the two. So it's very important to understand this. Again, I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. You're listening to Blue Zone Wellness. You can call in if you have a question or a comment, and the call-in number, again, is 917-889-2207. We are about to pivot over into our next article, which we're going to be talking about today. Again, and this article deals with sexual parasites. And as I said at the top of the show, this is something that I've spoken about in privately to people that I've seen, now also in seminars. And I even have an article, a couple of articles on my website at phase3ministries.com that deal with parasites. I would encourage you to go and read that. I've mentioned this in passing as well, how parasites can be sexually transmitted. But when I saw this article as well, I thought, well, since I've talked about this before, this article mentions it, so I think it's a good opportunity to take and talk about this again. And this particular article that this issue was addressed on is from the website unbiasedtalk.com. And the article starts off, and it came out on yesterday, June the 15th. And the article points out how important it is before becoming sexually involved with someone to get tested for STDs. Now, it is my position that it should be, before you get involved with someone that way, we really should be married. But we also understand that people are getting involved sexually who are not married. And even those who are, even if you're courting and dating, the article goes on to point out how sexually transmitted diseases are there and or can be present, and during that dating stage, you know, these things should be discussed or talked about. But beyond that, I just want to let you know that parasites can be transferred through physical contact, and they can cause serious health concerns because the body is exposed to new types of parasites, just similar to new types of viruses. They're not viruses per se, but the same way you can be exposed to new viruses from someone else by going to different localities, et cetera. The same principle is what I'm trying to say can affect you when it comes to parasite. So let's, for instance, if one person is a vegan and the other person consumes different meat products, both people will have parasites, but meat parasites have higher incidences of parasites. But meat eaters, rather, have higher incidences of parasites and can transfer harmful bacteria to their healthy partner through sexual contact. The article says further, though, these parasites mate, they lay eggs, and they grow throughout the body, causing diseases such as cancer, heart disease, infections, diabetes, and many more. And certain products, such as pork products, contain parasites that grow and affect the brain cells, causing very serious illnesses. So when intimately involved with the person who consumes pig products, you too can become contaminated with trichina worm, which is found in all pig products, whether it is cooked well or not. So basically, yes, you can end up with a sexually transmitted parasite. And it is very important to understand, or this is one of the reasons we need to understand, that it's very beneficial for both people, both husband and wife, to eat healthy. And so when you're married, you need to understand, or when you're considering marrying, it's very, your health could even be at risk, not even beyond just a sex-transmitted disease per se. And so it should encourage your mate or your potential future mate to be healthy, to seek to live a healthy life, because in the long run, they could easily be passing parasites to you that could eventually cause you to get sick or cause them to get sick either way. The article goes on to point out parasitic infection is extremely common, and most everyone has some. And I've talked about this before, so I'm not spending a lot of time on this. I've talked about worm and parasite infestation on here on more than one occasion. As this article points out, most people have Lyme or spirochetes or liver flukes or trichina cysta worms as often others as do as well. And an article says further, this is more likely if you work around the soil or not that clean in your living and sexual habits. If you travel the world, you eat pork, ham, or bacon, or live in Lyme-infected areas such as the East and West Coast of the U.S. and the Midwest as well. It also says further, places where one finds the highest rate of parasitic infection tend to be in the tropics and in nations with less cleanliness, and especially those where clean water is not really available. They are also more common where people walk barefoot or work barefoot or in water, such as rice paddies in Asia. However, parasites are everywhere, and they are not that easy to avoid. If you're listening to this show, there's quite a high possibility, a probability, that you have parasites. And most of us do. Even people who are typically vegetarian or vegan sometimes will not have them, but many times they will pick them up. People will have pets, and they will have the pets licking their faces and mouths, or have the pets in their beds, or they will walk around in sand and dirt, or they may themselves would typically not carry them, or and they may have a spouse that carries them and transmits them over to them, etc. Or they may not wash their fruit or vegetables thoroughly and that way. But generally speaking, the people who don't eat flesh will have a lower incidence of parasites, and they will not have such a high rate of dangerous parasites. Especially now, if you're eating pork, if you're eating any flesh, it's almost guaranteed that you have parasites. It's guaranteed that you have parasites. If you are eating flesh in general, now, but if you're eating pork, the likelihood that you're carrying very dangerous parasites goes up significantly. Lawrence Wilson, MD, is cited in this article, says, quote, "In so-called healthy people, the degree of infection is not severe, so there are few, if any, symptoms, and the parasitic infection does not affect the person very much." Then it goes on to talk about casual sex. And the article says, "Is the worst sexual practice, which means a person is inclined to be more parasitic bacteria, or is inclined to have more parasitic bacteria and disease. Spreading germs through sexual contact causes infections such as chlamydia and many other diseases and viruses." And the article points out how there is an old saying, when a person has sex with someone, they take a piece of that person. This is very true, but the pieces being taken also may look like parasites in this particular case. So again, this is another reason not to be involved in just casual sexual activity. And it greatly increases the likelihood that you're picking up and transmitting parasites inside your body, and which live, and they live, and they lay eggs, and they proliferate, and they grow. And sometimes they manifest in people who may think they have diabetes or they may have diabetes, and the diabetes was caused by parasites getting into their pancreas. Or they may have arthritis, and they think, well, why do I have this arthritis? And many times it may be because the parasites got into these areas and just eating away the cartilage. So there are many, many, many problems that they can cause. They eat and they defecate, and over time your body can become toxic because of the defecating of the parasites into your body. So this is very, very important to understand how you can pass these over to your spouse. Finally, this article points out, it goes on to say, and it's quoting, "For religious folks, sodomy is forbidden, and for everyone else, including religious people, it is highly unhealthy. Anal canals contain the most harmful diseases because it is an area where waste is eliminated and should not be tampered with. Having anal sex is similar to sticking one's hand in a barrel of toxic waste accumulated by foods and other chemicals, except it is sticking or receiving one's genitals in a pool of toxic human waste. That is why homosexual anal intercourse has been linked to a swarm of bacteria and parasitical sexually transmitted diseases, including AIDS." And the article goes on to further to say, and is quoting Timothy Daly, Ph.D. Proctitis and proctocolitis are inflammations of the rectum and colon that cause pain, bloody rectal discharge, and rectal spasms. Proctitis is associated with STDs such as gonorrhea, chlamydia, herpes, and syphilis that are widespread among homosexuals, says Timothy Daly, Ph.D. This also applies to heterosexual couples who engage in this type of sex or in oral sex as well, as the sperm carries parasites in both males and females. And so here we have some of the dangers of not only sexually transmitted diseases, but sexually transmitted parasites. And anything that deals with some of the filth that's pointed out here in anal sex, you can be it homosexual or heterosexual, you can get into some serious problems with that. So again, if just understand that healthier your spouse is, the healthier you will be when it comes to this. If you're a vegan or a vegetarian, you're all the better, especially if you're a vegan. And if you have a husband or a wife that's still consuming flesh, or that's still don't have an overall, or not really clean, or wants to involve you in sexual activities, that could heighten the likelihood that you could that they could transmit these parasites to you. Just beware that the likelihood that you could become seriously ill sooner or later down the road is definitely there. And parasites are real. Again, you can go to my website. I have a couple of pretty extensive articles explaining the different types of parasites, how you can pick different ones up. And again, you know, your spouse or other you may be healthy, but they may not be eating so healthy, or they may not be so concerned with their health, and then they can infect you with this sexually transmitted parasite. So again, it's very important to understand that you're listening to You Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I'm going to come back right after this brief message. We're going to continue. We're going to go into talking about pivot over, and we're going to talk about our healing food, which is today beet. We've talked about beet before, but we're going to talk about, again, I talked about how beneficial it is for your liver. We're going to talk about beetroot juice, and we're going to look at how it's very, very beneficial for you for stamina, especially if you're a person that's working out. And if you listen to this show before, you know that I encourage you to work out. I encourage you to exercise. And when you're exercising, you want to have that extra energy. You want to have that stamina. So we're going to talk about how beet juice can help you have that. We'll be back right after these brief messages. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry, Blue Zone Wellness.
You are listening to Blue Zone Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry on BlueZoneWellness.org. Be sure to join us here every week at the same time. You can also listen at blogtalkradio.com/BlueZoneWellness. There you can also download the app and listen to the archive versions on your smartphone. So from Blue Zone Wellness, here's to your health.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. The Simple Natural Health Secrets Blog.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease. The doctors of the future are here." Welcome to Blue Zone Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Welcome back to You Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Thank you for listening, wherever you may be located. In the event you are listening to the replay, I'd like to remind you that if you that we're here every Sunday afternoon from 4 to 5 p.m. in general. Every now and again, we may have a replay, but in general, we're here every Sunday afternoon from 4 to 5 p.m. So you can listen live. You can call in with a question or a comment. You can also visit us at facebook.com/naturedoc. Send me a friend request. We're going to go ahead and jump into our healing foods. And our healing food for this week is beet juice. We've talked about beet juice in the past. And if this is your first time listening, this is the section where we discuss healing food or particular food or vegetable, nut or whatnot. And we talk about some of the benefits of it. Sometimes we talk about one, sometimes we talk about several. Today we just have one. And this is, again, beet juice. And beet juice is, we're going to talk about it this time. Last time we talked about it, we talked about it from the benefit of it being able to clean your liver and actually contribute to your overall health. This time I want to talk about it in the context of how it can give you, I can give you benefit and energy when you're working out and extra stamina. And so if you're looking for a simple, natural way to increase the length of your workout, so if you just want to give yourself that little edge in endurance or speed, then beet juice can actually help you do that. It is now. Let's look at some of the things that beet juice can do. Beet juice is naturally high in nitrate, or what's called NO3, and the body uses this to make both nitrite and nitric oxide. So here, beet juice is naturally high in nitrate, NO3. The body uses this nitrate to make nitrite, which is NO2, as well as nitric acid. Now, nitrite is known to protect your blood vessels from injury, while nitric acid actually expands your blood vessels and therefore increases the flow of oxygen to your cells. This, in turn, increases both the power available to the muscles and the length of the time that the muscles can increase, or exercise, rather, without getting tired. Early studies into the effectiveness of beet juice for exercise showed that people who drink the juice for several days before undergoing exercise tests do indeed use less oxygen in their muscles, and correspondingly, they're able to exercise longer as opposed to those who didn't. And one study, drinking beet juice actually increased oxygen needs by 19%, or rather decreased the need for oxygen by 19%, and it increased the exercise endurance time by 17%, which is significant. That's almost, 36% net gain just by drinking, in one study, according to this one study, by drinking beet juice. There have been other studies also where scientists have proved that drinking beet juice increases people's blood concentration of the nitrates, and that beet juice can also has had the nitrates artificially, rather, beet juice that has had the nitrates artificially removed actually loses its exercise-boosting power. So a lot of times you will buy beet juice, and if the nitrates have been removed, you're not going to get the benefit. The best thing to do is to purchase your beets. Maybe at the supermarket or at a health food store or at one of these Asian stores, which they typically will have them, and have a juice or a champion juice of some sort, and juice it and drink it from that perspective, and it'll be the likelihood that you're getting your nitrates then is very, very good. Now, there have been early studies focused on whether beet juice can actually increase the time before an athlete becomes exhausted. And the more recent studies have focused on the juice's real-world effects on athletic performance, exercise, etc. And for instance, there was a study published in 2011 in the journal Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, and this study found that cyclists who drank beet juice and then rested for 2.25 hours, were actually able to complete a 4-kilometer cycling task at about 11 seconds faster than cyclists who had consumed a nitrate-depleted form of the beet juice. Placebo. And so the experimental group also completed a 16.1 kilometer task 45 seconds faster than a control group. So again, the studies have shown, when bared out in the practical world even, that beet juice, especially taking this more natural state where it hasn't been deprived of its nitrate, actually can give you stamina. And not only stamina, quicker, make you quicker, and also because your muscles still have more oxygen because of the nitric oxide. In fact, now there's a study done recently from Maastricht University Medical Center in the Netherlands, and they conducted a pair of beet juice studies, rather, not just one. They did a pair of them, and they published both of these studies in the International Journal of Sport, Nutrition, and Exercise Metabolism, and they published this just last year in 2012. In the first, the researchers had 12 male cyclists with an average age of about 31, and they drank 140 milliliters per day of either normal beet juice or a nitrate-depleted placebo. So they did this for 6 days. The men then participated in a 60-minute cycling exercise and in a 10-kilometer time cycling trial. After a 14-day washout period, participants were given the other beverage and the trial was repeated. So first they took the beverage with the regular beverage with the nitrates, and then they took the beverage without the nitrates. And according to the study, as expected, the researchers found that cyclists performed better following the nitrate-rich beet juice treatment in both time as well as the power output. In the second study, the cyclists drank the beet juice 2.5 hours prior to performing the cycling trial, as in the 2011 study, but this time no difference was seen in performance between the nitrate-rich and the nitrate-depleted groups. Further research they determined would be needed to decide why such a big difference when the time was shortened. So in other words, when they consumed the beet juice significantly, like over the matter of 7 days, they saw more significant results than when they received or drank the beet juice like a couple of hours before the exercise test. So basically, you walk away with the idea that by saturating the body on a daily basis with, you know, maybe 4 or 5 ounces of beet juice at a time, and over the period of 7 days, it actually builds up, I guess, the nitrate and the nitric acid in the body, and then your muscles and et cetera will begin, and your vessels will begin to see. This is when you really begin to see the benefits of the beet juice. So again, if you're starting to work out, you're starting to try to lose weight, you want to work out more, you want to feel healthier. If you're feeling tired or whatnot when you're going to do your workout, if you want a little bit more energy, one of the best things to do is first go to bed early. You get more rest. Also, drink more water. Water gives you energy. And then maybe you want to add some beet juice to your protocol. And you may not see any benefit right away in terms of strength and in terms of endurance, but you should see some benefit within about a week in terms of strength and endurance by drinking beet juice. Now, a lot of people don't like the taste of beet juice. So what you may want to do is mix in with some carrot juice. Carrot juice tends to be naturally sweet, and I'm not particularly a lover of beet juice, but I could probably manage it if I mix it with a considerable amount of carrot juice, because carrot juice has a very sweet taste to it, and not only do you get the benefit from the beet juice, but you also get the benefit from the carrot juice that has its own several benefits, beta-carotene, etc. Again, you're listening to Blue Zone Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. What we're going to do now, we're going to pivot over to our final segment, and this is the segment dealing with the healing herb or healing supplement. And last week, I was talking about milk thistle. And so what we're going to do, we're going to deal with, before we move over to milk thistle, I just want to mention briefly, I was doing some reading, and I just thought it would be interesting to just mention flu season. Although flu season is not upon us, the time to prepare for it is before it hits again. And I just want to remind you, one of the things to remember is you may want to even now begin to prepare before the flu season rolls around again, and get a hold of some, either grow your own or get a hold of some so you have it on hand. And is elderberry. Because a lot of times people in the summertime will get colds, et cetera. Elderberry is really more of a flu specific. It could be used in a cold, because the cold is really I guess you could call it a smaller cousin of a flu, I guess you could say. But I just want to remind you that it is, as opposed to getting a flu shot, it's a good thing to even now get a hold of some elderberry, have it in stock. If you often talk about making a natural first aid kit, that's something that I think you would be wise to have in your stock, as well as colloidal silver and some other natural antibiotics. But just to give you the reason I said, I just want to give you one or two quick reasons for that before we move on and get back into our discussion of milk thistle. the elderberry is so efficient that in 2005, researchers in London studied black elderberry, and they found that it is 99% effective in fighting avian flu, which is H5N1 virus, rather. And Germany, the scientists have conducted studies on the elderberry, and they found how it works to actually boost your immune system. And again, in fact, just to add to that, back in, I think it was 2005, if I'm not mistaken. It was 1995. And in 1995, the entire influenza epidemic was thwarted in Panama by utilizing elderberry treatment. That's how effective this God-given herb is. So again, don't wait until the flu season is upon you and just start preparing now. And also have it on hand, because even though it's not the flu season, people still sometimes get the flu. They get colds, and it can actually be integrated if you have a cold. But it's very, very effective at helping to boost the immune system, but it's very, very effective at fighting off flu. So I was just doing some reading earlier, and I said, let me just put this out there so you can go ahead and be prepared. Have it in your emergency kit, your natural first aid kit. Have it in there so you have it on hand. Now, as I mentioned last week when we were talking about milk thistle, we're going to continue our discussion on that in these last 10 minutes or so. Milk thistle, as I mentioned before, is extraordinarily useful in the treatment of almost any liver disease, and such diseases as alcoholic hepatitis, cirrhosis of the liver, liver poisoning, and even viral hepatitis. And it's one of the few herbs that have no real pharmaceutical equivalent. And I mentioned before how it regulates digestion of fats, helps stabilize blood sugars and cholesterol, reduces inflammation of the intestines, and promotes the exertion of certain hormones. There have been many, many studies done on milk thistle, and it has many other benefits outside of those that I just mentioned. And actually, milk thistle is actually used in certain areas over in Europe when there is poisoning from alcohol of the liver. That's how effective milk thistle is. Now, I talked about some of the other disease and abnormalities that milk thistle are good to offset. And I'm going to pick up with, with how it's beneficial in diseases such as atherosclerosis, gallstones, high cholesterol, and iron overload. So let's talk about these for a minute. Milk thistle, by stimulating the protein synthesis in your liver, can actually lower your total cholesterol count. And therefore, because it helps the liver convert low-density lipoprotein, or LDL, or bad cholesterol, into high-density lipoprotein, or HDL, the good cholesterol. So by taking milk thistle, if you have high cholesterol, one of the things that the Creator has given us in this particular herb can actually help lower your cholesterol level, overall cholesterol level, and especially your bad cholesterol level, and actually increase your good cholesterol level, by stimulating protein synthesis in your liver. Not only that, milk thistle also prevents cholesterol that has been excreted into the bile from being reabsorbed into the body. And the milk thistle component, one of the components in milk thistle called psilocybin, stops the oxidation of LDL cholesterol into a form that actually creates plaques in the lining of your artery walls. So here you have a herb that's very, very powerful. That's why I said earlier, there's no equivalent pharmaceutical equivalent that can give the benefits like milk thistle can, notwithstanding the benefits, and not have any attending side effects. Now, I said I was going to talk a little bit more about the atherosclerosis, the high cholesterol, as well as the iron. When you look at how it works in times of oxidation of the LDL cholesterol into a form that creates plaques in the lining of artery wall that prevents it from doing that, this also prevents cholesterol from gathering into your arteries and plaquing them or clogging them up on your arterial walls. And this actually slows down atherosclerosis, which is the hardening of your arteries. So in addition, milk thistle also lowers the cholesterol content of the bile, which reduces the chance of gallstone formation. So just by taking milk thistle, these are some of the things that it can do to help reduce some of the problems such as gallstones, elevated cholesterol levels, atherosclerosis. And I wonder how many people would have prevented maybe gallstone operations had they known about milk thistle and just overall eating healthy. Now, we're going to move on to something else that milk thistle can help you with. Milk thistle can actually help with cancer. Now, I'm not saying if you have cancer, just take milk thistle and that's it. Whenever you have cancer, any serious disease of that nature, you have to have a total program, a total protocol, a whole body holistic program where you have to deal with everything from the physical, the spiritual, and the mental, the emotional. But it is one of the weapons that can be used if you indeed have cancer. Some breast cancers, as well as other forms of cancer, are stimulated by the hormone estrogen. And so this is one of the things, it's called an estrogen-based cancer, or estrogen-dominant cancer. And a lot of times in women who have breast cancer, if I'm dealing with the case, I need to know whether or not it is a estrogen-based or hormone-based cancer. Because a lot of practitioners, if you're listening, you're a practitioner, if it's an estrogen-based cancer, you know that carrot juice is typically one of the things that's given to treat cancer in cancer clinics around the world. It's very, very beneficial because of the high beta carotene content. But if the cancer is estrogen based or hormone based, you're going to have to really cut back or find a substitute for that carrot juice. And because of the phytochemicals, the phytochemicals will actually feed the phytoestrogens will actually feed the tumor or feed the cancer. And so you have to kind of work around that, but it's possible. In fact, there are laboratory studies that find that the psilocybin, which is a chemical found in milk thistle, actually competes for the receptor sites that will receive estrogen, in these kinds of cancer cells. So scientists at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, actually have found that psilocybin stops the growth of breast cancer cells both within tumors and, more important, before anchor cells in other organs of the body. So here you have, again, who would have thought that the creator was given something, milk thistle, who most people just think about in terms of the liver, but it also, when you understand chemically and the chemistry behind how it works in the body, you can just sit back in awe and see how effective and how prolific a herb milk thistle is. Now, I am about out of time. We're going to continue our march through talking about milk thistle. We plan to continue it next week. In the last minute, I may be able to do two other benefits of it in terms of the cancer. And there was another study where mice were given milk thistle compound, psilocybin, in a very large dose, equivalent to about 30 grams or approximately 1 ounce for a 110-pound adult. And they were completely shielded from kidney damage during the treatment, the cancer chemotherapy, with one of the agents used in chemotherapy, platinol. Another study, in other words, they were given these high dosages of milk thistle, and the milk thistle protected them from the damage of the side effects of the chemotherapy that it would have done to their kidneys, and they were given in large amounts. And they basically found that when given in these large amounts, it would have been enough to protect a 110-pound adult from kidney damage during the treatment with chemotherapy by giving them 30 grams, that's 30,000 milligrams, or 1 ounce of milk thistle. So again, we'll continue our discussion and talking about how effective an herb milk thistle is. And as I close to it, I begin to talk about the amounts to use. I just want to go through some of the diseases and abnormalities that it can protect you from and actually help you heal. But I'm about out of time. Again, if you caught the show late, it should be, the replay will be available in probably about 10 to 15 minutes, I suspect. I just remind you to join me again next week on U-Zone Wellness. I thank you for listening. And I'd like to just remind you, we broadcast here from 4 to 5 p.m. on Sundays. And if you missed the live broadcast, you can always listen to our replay. Again, go visit faithfreeministries.com to read more information. You can also visit me on Facebook.